In around 1895, a young, demure, and simple nun living in a Carmelite monastery in Lisieux, France, began writing at the behest of her biological sisters what she would call a story of her soul. It would become her own Magnificat. She died in 1897 through a terrible bout of tuberculosis. And yet her sisters, inspired by what she wrote, published her work. And her devotion and fame began spreading throughout Europe like wildfire. She was beatified in 1923, canonized in 1925. Pope Pius X said that she was the greatest saint of modern times. I refer, of course, to Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, one of the greatest saints whose work continues to this day. And in this video, we will discuss five lessons from her life. The first lesson about Thérèse begins less with Thérèse than with the people who influenced her most, her family. In particular, her mother and father, Zélie and Louis Martin. Zélie and Louis, before they married, both aspired to the religious life and for various reasons realized that God would call them to a different vocation. Zélie determined, if I would not be a religious, then I will raise up many children to heaven. Zélie and Louis had 9 children, 4 of whom died tragically at a very young age, but all of their daughters became religious. Zélie and Louis were both artisans. She was an award-winning lace maker, and he was a professional watchmaker, and their attention to detail was applied to how they raised their children in the Catholic faith. Zélie and Louis ordered their home around the local parish, in particular daily mass at 5:30 every morning. Zélie and Louis made sure their family maintained all of the fasts of the church and all of the feasts of the church. Thérèse often recollects how her father would make frequent visits to the Blessed Sacrament and he would take her along with him. And she would see him in prayer and she would say to herself that to look at my father praying must have been what it was like to see the saints pray. And Thérèse, in many ways, imitated her father in prayer. Louis was often told by his townsfolk that he would be more profitable in his business if he only opened on Sundays. But Louis always refused, observing the Sabbath every week. Thérèse recalls she and her father would give alms to the poor who would come to their home almost every week. From Zélie and Louis, Thérèse learned to trust in divine providence, to accept all the joys and sorrows of this life, and that our sacrifices, however small, that we do for the love of God, will redound to God's glory and for the benefit of others. Why do we have children? The world has its answers, but for Catholics, there's only one answer. We have children to make saints, to raise children up to the Lord, and the Martin family shows us how. The second lesson about Thérèse concerns her doctrine of the little way. Thérèse had a desire to be a saint, a great saint, and she believed that God would never have inspired her with this desire had he no intention of fulfilling it. She trusted that God never commands the impossible. So when Jesus says, "Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect," it must be attainable. Yet when Thérèse looked within herself, she saw too many imperfections and weaknesses to make this possible. Thérèse never dabbled in false humility. She never exaggerated her weaknesses to be more than what they were. She was truly honest with herself. Thérèse compared herself to the great saints like a little grain of sand next to a mountain whose summit reaches into the clouds. And her question became, how am I going to get from here to there? And Thérèse, by meditating upon the scriptures, realized, I need a shortcut and I need a lift. And if I throw myself into the arms of Jesus, He will be my lift and He will raise me up to Himself. The little way is more than a set of practices and methods. It's more than just doing little things with great love. It is a way of being. It is a disposition of the heart. It is acknowledging that on our own, we are nothing, and we can do nothing without Christ. Therese believed that Jesus was holiness itself. He was sanctity itself. And if she was going to be holy, then what she needed to do, she said, was borrow the holiness and sanctity that belonged to Christ alone. If God wanted her to have faith, hope, and love, then God was going to have to be faith, hope, and love in her. That yes, we are called to be saints, but we do not have the strength to become saints on our own. Instead, we can throw ourselves into the arms of God our Father like a little child to its parent and allow God and God's life to live in us. Lord, you can love in me and through me. That is the essence of a little way. The third lesson about Therese concerns her devotion to the Virgin Mary. The devotion to the Virgin Mary was very much the soil in which the little flower grew, developed, and received her nourishment. Consider her full name, Mary Therese Francois Martin. Zélie and Louis Martin named all of their children after the Virgin Mary. Why? Because they wanted to ensure all their children were consecrated to the Holy Mother. And it was through a statue of the Virgin Mary in Therese's room where Mary appeared and smiled upon her, healing Therese of a terrible illness from which she suffered for many weeks. Consider the convent and the order she joined, the Carmelites, the first order dedicated to the Virgin Mary. And Therese herself said she would only want to be a priest for one reason, so she could preach a homily about the Blessed Virgin Mary. Therese once mused that she thought herself richer than the Virgin Mary. Why? Because Therese says, Mary, I have you to love, but you do not have, like me, the Blessed Mother to love. And the very last sentence Therese wrote was, O Mary, if I were Queen of Heaven and you were Therese, I would happily be Therese to see you Queen of Heaven. By the time Therese died, many people saw in Therese a living expression of the Virgin Mary, that Therese assumed a Marian form in her life. A confessor said to Therese, I declare before God and the holy angels that you have never committed a grave sin. Although Therese was certainly not immaculately conceived, she did intuit that God had, by a special preservative grace, prevented her from falling into mortal sin. Therese kept a copy of the Gospels near her heart, and like the Virgin Mother, she treasured and pondered the Lord's word and kept them in her heart. And with prophetic insight, Therese saw that after her death, many people would love her, as if all generations will call me blessed. And Therese understood heaven not as a place of repose or rest, but as an expansion of her mission to be an advocate for the church, for lost souls, and like the Blessed Mother herself, to be a refuge of sinners. When she was a small girl, her father gave her the nickname Little Queen. He meant that as a term of endearment, but his too was a prophetic insight. By the time Therese's life ended, she really had become a little queen, a Mary in miniature. The fourth lesson about Therese concerns her love and desire for Jesus and the Holy Eucharist. For Therese, there was no personal relationship with Jesus apart from the Blessed Sacrament. And from the earliest age, she desired to receive her Lord in Holy Communion. One of the most beautiful passages in her autobiography concerns how she describes her first communion. She said up until that point, her relationship with Jesus was face to face. It was a glance at each other. But when she received her Lord in the Blessed Sacrament, it was no longer face to face. It was a fusion. The two became one, and it was no longer Therese who lived. It was Christ living in her. What Therese saw in the Holy Eucharist was perfect humility. Jesus descending under the guise of bread, that he could not lower himself to us anymore. Therese wanted to receive Jesus in the Eucharist as often as possible. Her sister Marie said that her greatest source of suffering at the Carmelite convent consisted of its infrequent practice of Holy Communion. Therese would say to the hesitant, "It is not to remain in a golden ciborium that Jesus comes down each day from heaven. He wants to find another heaven, the heaven of our souls, in which he takes delight." What can we learn from Therese's great desire for frequent communion? That it is an encounter with Christ himself. When we receive the Holy Eucharist, we receive a person. And when we visit him in adoration, we are quenching his thirst, a thirst that she believed was a thirst for souls, a thirst for our love. Therese understood Jesus in the Holy Eucharist fills what is empty. He fills what is impoverished in us. And when he fills us, he transforms our nothingness into holy fire. The fifth lesson about Therese concerns her experiences of suffering and sacrifice. Therese's life was fraught with pain and loss and grief. She lost her mother when she was only 4 years old. She lost her older sisters to the Carmelite convent. She experienced tremendous illnesses throughout her life and suffered from chronic headaches. She experienced periods of intense scrupulosity. Even near the end of her life, she was tested against faith and the existence of God. And of course, one of her tremendous sorrows, which she called a piercing of her heart, concerned the loss of her father when she was just 21, a man she called her king, her beloved. Therese understood the sufferings of her life to be a part of God's providence. And because she knew God was a good God, she understood that God only wills our good, but does permit the evil and the suffering for a greater good. So she embraced them because she trusted that God would use them to draw her closer to him and to make her holier as a result. But Therese never sought suffering for its own sake. Instead, she wanted to be so conformed to Christ, including Christ on his cross. He suffered for love, and so she wanted to suffer for love with him. Therese understood that love in this life feeds on sacrifices. Love needs to show its willingness to sink into the depths for the sake of others. And so Therese would do small sacrifices throughout the day, every day. She would break her will. She would do these hidden acts of service for others. They would have no idea who was doing them. And she would gravitate to the most disagreeable personality in the convent as an expression of her own sacrifice to show forth her love for God. Therese, the last 2 years, especially the last year of her life, suffered from the debilities of tuberculosis. She slowly began to asphyxiate, and yet she saw in her suffering a greater conformity to Christ on his cross, who also suffered from asphyxiation. There was a poignant moment as Therese was dying when her sisters propped her up, one sister on each side, her arms outstretched, her body limp, barely breathing, and it looked as if it was Christ himself appearing through her. But Therese was willing to suffer this way if it meant that the love with which she loved Christ and the love with which she was willing to humiliate herself, to descend as Christ did, were renowned to the salvation of the world. Her last words were, "Oh, how I love him. My God, I love you." What is the lesson that Therese teaches us about suffering and sacrifice? All of us have suffering and sorrow in our lives. But can we trust, as Therese did, that God only wills our good? And whatever evils and sufferings and sorrows are happening to us are meant for a greater good. We can, as Christ did on His cross, absorb them, and absorb them in love for the salvation of other souls, a family member, or for sinners in general. We are bringing glory to God because we are bringing His love into the world, a love that was willing to sacrifice and suffer for us.
Thank you for watching this video. Productions like this one are only possible because of the patrons that support this channel. Thank you for believing in this project. May God bless you, and may the Virgin Mary protect you.